Welcome to You've Got This with Sarah Hammaker, a podcast to encourage and equip moms along their parenting journey. Join Sarah each week as she interviews dads and moms like you and discusses the joys, challenges, and rewards of raising kids.
Hi, and welcome to You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and I'm so glad you joined me. Today, I have with me Tracy Maxfield. She's a retired nurse with more than 36 years of experience in mental health, dementia care, and other areas. She's written numerous articles on dementia care, medical research, and mental illness and bullying in teenagers. So welcome to my show, Tracy.
Thank you so much for having me.
Now, you know, mental illness in kids and teenagers, it's not really something we like to talk about, is it? Because we kind of want our kids to be perfect. And that seems like an imperfection.
Absolutely. And I think because of the changes in society right now compared to when I was a kid, I think parents are not realizing that we have so many pressures and expectations on our kids, and they've been exposed to so much more. And what this is doing is it's actually leading to an increase in mental illness or mental disorders in children and teenagers.
Yeah, it seems like anecdotally, it seems like there are a lot more kids getting diagnosed with some pretty severe mental illnesses and diseases. So have you, in your research, you've seen that there is an actual uptick in these kind of diagnoses?
Oh, significantly. And I think one is because I think doctors have better assessment tools to use that helps them with the diagnosis. But also, I think, again, as I said, it's the changes that are going on in society. And so they usually identify three risk factors for someone developing a mental illness or disorder. And I usually find a disorder is a little bit better accepted amongst kids, because as soon as you put mental illness, everyone thinks crazy and insane. And so what they've determined is that the risk factors are genetic, or it could be what they call internal environment. And that's things that happen in utero. So it could be, for example, fetal alcohol syndrome, or if mom took drugs, things like that. And then there's the external environment. And the external environment is everything that this child or teenager is exposed to. So not only in the home, but also in school and in the community. And so you can think of the horrors that we see on social media and news daily. This is what kids are exposed to. But in the home environment, it could be drugs, it could be crime, it could be abuse. It could be seeing their mum being abused. And so all of these stressors, they call them ACEs, adverse childhood experiences. And what they're finding is that usually when they used to do ACE scores, they used to link childhood experiences to what was going on in an adult, say the development of an immune disorder or cancer or depression. But now what they're seeing is if they start looking at the child's environment and starting to make changes to that, it'll actually reduce the likelihood of that child going on to have a mental illness or developing a drug and alcohol abuse, things like that.
Oh, that's just fascinating. So can you talk a little bit more about what some of those changes are?
So what happens is when a child is constantly exposed to negativity or abuse or neglect, maltreatment, seeing things in the community, maybe their drug dealing on the corner, or their father's in prison, or divorce, death of a pet even, changing schools all the time. They call it toxic stress. And it's the catchphrase, actually. Toxic stress is the only way that they can describe what is really the bad kind of stress. And adults, we have it too. But because a child's brain is developing and growing throughout childhood into teenagers, actually into a young adulthood. So, for example, a female brain is not fully developed until age 21 to 24, and the male brain, 24 to 27. So you can see how all the things that are going on in their life are affecting not only their perception of themselves and the world, but also how the brain grows. And they're finding that toxic stress actually changes how the brain develops. It slows the development. The brain is a little smaller in size, and it creates inflammation. They liken it to, think of the old LPs, the record players, mm-hmm. and the needle is stuck. But the record keeps going around and around, but the needle's stuck. And that's what the brain is like. And it floods these kids, their brain and body, because it's connected, with inflammatory chemicals, for want of a better word. And this does, I mean, the effect on the brain is one thing, but it also affects the body. So, you know, you have a depression, but you may say that you have no appetite, that you have joint pain, that you feel really exhausted. And it's this brain-body connection with this toxic stress that these kids are dealing with that we're finding is increasing their likelihood of having a mental disorder. Primarily, the top five right now, depression, anxiety, eating disorders, and also OCD, obsessive compulsive disorder. Now, they always bring in ADHD, attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, into that equation. But the thing is that ADHD really isn't what we would classify as a mental illness per se. It's kind of the brain on overdrive. And I know lots of parents get really upset and offended if it's classified in that category. Unfortunately, it's classified in the psychiatric manual, the DSM-5. Right. But really, it's something that's neurocognitive, but it's also physical. And so I mention it as an aside because I don't classify it as what we would classify a true mental disorder, if you understand what I'm saying.
Yes, yeah, I do, Tracy. And that's interesting, you know, the toxic stress. My husband and I are fairly recent foster parents, and we received training to be therapeutic foster parents. And toxic, you know, I mean, obviously kids, when they're taken from their home, they're experiencing stress, and putting them in a different home, you know, some of our training is involved with, well, how do you relate to them? We need to help them to, you know, de-stress, and we have to, there's certain things that we're going to, that we might overlook in a foster child living in our home that I wouldn't overlook for my own children because of how that stress is causing their brain not to function properly. And, you know, things like that, which I thought was just really fascinating, you know, to kind of, just to kind of learn about a little more and what stress can do to the brain and to the body and why we just have no, and then on the flip side though, is that I think we just have no patience with that. Right.
Right. It is. And I think, I mean, everyone's doing the best job they can. Family structure today is different when I was a child. So I'm 56. So I was the child of the 60s and 70s. And certainly, you know, there were things going on, but we didn't have computers. So, you know, we had to include social media. Right. I mean, certainly we have access now to information, connections with people that we never had when I was a child. And I think what some parents misunderstand is that this has an effect on their child. I mean, they've just released a study proving that the video games can have it's an addiction, and it's listed now as an addiction in the psychiatric manual, but video games is having such a detrimental impact on the development of kids' brains that they become so desensitized to violence that they're on a hyper-vigilant, hyper-mega alert mode all the time, even if they don't see it. Not only is this having a significant impact on their brain and body development and growth, but also on how they perceive violence. And in Britain especially, they're seeing that teenagers who are repeatedly doing these X-rated video games now feel it's perfectly normal to gang rape teenagers.
Right.
Because it's the desensitization. It almost becomes such a norm for them that they need, and I think it's because unless there's an adult there that can sit down with them and say, now, you know, this isn't real life. when you shoot someone, they don't get up and play the game again. You know, there's pain. And for them to understand the social emotional component, if you don't have someone there to explain that to them, then, you know, you have a group of teenagers who say, hey, you know, they follow one another. It's okay. We've seen it on the game. There's been no accountability. Let's try this. And that's the scary part.
You're right. And I think, you know, social media, there was another study recently that I saw in an American paper about, you know, that this Instagram is really can be very bad for girls because they see all these models that have been, you know, the pictures have been manipulated and changed. And then they just are like, oh, I've got to look like that. I've got to do that. So it can create this extra layer that we didn't have growing up.
No.
You know, just even if you, you know, are a hermit and don't want, you know, you can't really escape it.
Not at all. And unfortunately, when we allow everyone and anyone to have access to it, that's the danger, because I think they did a news report yesterday that that the number one issue with teenagers was the loneliness. We're the most, even though we're connected and we may have 5,000 Facebook friends, teenagers saying that they are completely lonely and misunderstood and feel disconnected, because unless you know truly who you're communicating with, the guy in Australia who's 14 and you think he's your online boyfriend could really be a 55-year-old pedophile.
Right, right.
And this is the challenge. And I think because there's such disconnect, ultimately we all want to be loved and we all want to be liked and belong. And kids are pulled into that because, you know, as teenagers, popularity, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, and yes, that's why there has been a huge surge, not only in eating disorders, but also in non-suicidal self-injury or cutting self-harm.
Yes. And that just breaks my heart. I mean, it really does, because, you know, these are kids who have everything to live for, and yet, you know, they can't get out of their own head, you know, in some respects, that the records that's playing in their mind is not one that is conducive to a healthy, you know, to having a healthy life. So that it just always makes me very sad.
Oh, absolutely. And I think the challenges that our kids are facing today is that we've enabled and encouraged them to access social media. But in so doing, I think one of the biggest problems is that we're not actually monitoring what they access and participate in, and we don't take the time to sit down with them and explain things. It became an easy babysitter for many people, and now it's become a global addiction.
Yes, yeah, and it has. You know, people used to think I was kind of a crazy mom because, you know, my kids didn't watch TV shows.
Right.
You know, and my kids are between the ages of, I have four children between the ages of 11 and 17 now, and they don't have tablets. You know, my three older have computers because the schools give them computers, but we're pretty much, they have to have them in the main room. I'm pretty strict about how much time they have, what they're doing on it. You know, it's been a challenge. But when I go to the grocery store and I see little toddlers and preschoolers holding their parents' phone, watching something, it just breaks my heart.
It's very sad and it's very scary because, I mean, this is the reality. We have inadvertently exposed our children and our teenagers from a very, very young age to adult situations, violence, riots, poverty, drugs, human trafficking, all that they can access on their tablets, on their phones, but they can also see it around them. And we are almost treating them as adults. Even, you know, some mom relationships have changed where the mom thinks that they are the best friends of their 15-year-old teenage daughter. And go, and go out clubbing with them. And what this has done is that we have created a generation of kids who we treat like adults, but we've never actually given them the skill set to understand how to become an adult because they are children.
Right.
And then we're horrified when they go ahead and do adult things, but they're much too young. Why has that happened? But you actively encourage them and expose them to that. And unless you're sitting down, as you said, and monitor what they're doing and then talk about it later, how do you expect them to understand if there's no one there that can guide them and explain things and explain really what is, you know, good manners and respect and socially appropriate behaviors and things? If you're not there doing that, then you're using social media to do that, and they're not really setting a good example.
Right. And well, and you know, to be honest, so many times it's the parents who are on their phones all the time and on this, you know, we went out to eat. We don't go out to eat often as a family because there's seven of us now. We have a foster daughter living with us. And, you know, so when we do go out to eat, you know, I remember one time, like one of my sons looked around and we were the only family who wasn't staring at phones.
Tell me about it.
And they're like, why? I'm like, well, we actually want to have a conversation. I want my children at the dinner table, you know, we ask about each other's days. We talk about what's going on. You know, sometimes it's pretty chaotic and, you know, things get kind of crazy, but that's the whole purpose. We're not going out to eat to stare at our phones all the time
and that's it. It's we've even got a family disconnect. So if you got mom and dad who are always on their phones, and now you, like, you're 12 years old and things are going on at school, you could be being bullied relentlessly and you're getting really scared and you want to talk to someone, and they've got their noses in a phone all the time, which kind of tells you do not disturb.
Right.
And you've also maybe not established, we all sit down for breakfast or we all sit down for dinner a couple of times a week. You know, you have a family night, then Why will your child open up to you if you've not established that opportunity that they can come to you with anything?
Yeah. And it's important to establish that
relationship. You have to.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, even if some of my listeners are like, wow, we haven't done it, my kids are in high school already, it's not too late.
No, all the podcasts I've done, I always urge parents to try and set up a night with your kids. It's important to do a family night, and I know most teenagers kind of roll their eyes a little bit, but again, it does help, even though they kind of make out that it's a real pain. But I think also it's good to have one-on-one time. So, you know, I'm not a huge proponent of junk food, but if a treat is going to McDonald's, then go one-on-one with one of your kids, or go to a ball game, or go to the park, or walk the dog, or go and get your nails done. Something where there's one-on-one time which enables you to kind of talk with your teen and try and get them to open up. And also, you know, take that time to tell them how proud you are of them and show love to them, because we know that there is a huge epidemic of teenage suicide, not only in the States, but globally. Mm. And in those that attempted suicide and didn't die, in their suicide notes or when they were questioned later, they said that they didn't feel that they were loved and that everyone was so busy that they would be better off without them and they wouldn't notice they were gone. And for a child or a teenager to feel like that, we've done them a disservice.
Oh, yes. Yeah. So, and that is so sad to hear that. So for my listeners, you know, connect with your kids. It can be a little awkward sometimes to have conversations, you know, but keep persisting, keep working at it.
Absolutely. I always say, if anyone's listening to this who is a parent, or even they could be a grandparent or an aunt or uncle, and there is a child or a teenager, put down your phone, turn off the TV. It's only going to take 30 seconds. Go find them and sit next to them. And they'll know their body parameters with touching and things. But touch them or give them a hug. But sit there and just say, I want you to know. Sometimes, you know, we get on each other's nerves, but I love you to death. I'll do anything for you. And you're the best thing that's happened to me. You've got to express that, because for all you know, they could be about to go and do something really silly, like have underage sex, go drinking, participate in a crime, right. Self-harm, suicidal. Parents have got to take that time out. And, you know, the kids may brush you off and say, get out of here. What's going on? Oh, what's wrong with you or something? But don't take offense to that. That's just them. But when you've gone away, there's going to be that little part of them in that heart that's going to be, okay, they care. And you could have made the biggest intervention of your life at that moment. And you may never know it, but it's opened the door. It's opened the door a chink, and you've got to do it.
No, and that is a great way to end our show, because unfortunately we're out of time, Tracy. So thank you for being my guest today.
Oh, you're most welcome. I've had a great time. Thank you.
You've been listening to You've Got This. I'm your host, Sarah Hammaker, and I've been talking to Tracy Maxfield. She's a retired nurse. She's done a lot of research into dementia care and mental illness and bullying in teenagers, and you can read more about her in the bio. Connect with your kids. That's what we want to leave you with today. Take that time to tell your kids how much you love them. And I hope that you'll come back and join me next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's podcast of You've Got This with Sarah Hammaker. Sign up to receive notification of new podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammaker.com. Until next time, remember, parenting might be hard sometimes, but don't worry. You've got this.